Paint that picture of the future so your team members can know what it's going to feel like to walk in the office. You know, what it's going to look like. What is your marketing going to be like in 3 years? How big is your team going to be? And really paint it out so they can not just hear it, but see with their own eyes that vision. And so you add pictures to it. Create an environment where your team members can focus and you support that focus and you want to reward them for it and so that they can live that great life.
Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to another episode of Trial Law Review, where I'm joined by John S. Berry. He is a seasoned trial attorney and the driving force behind Berry Law, a firm dedicated to defending the rights of veterans and serving those who've been injured. With a background rooted in military service, including deployments as a platoon leader in Bosnia and a company commander in Iraq, John brings the leadership, resilience, and tactical expertise learned in the U.S. Army to his firm. His service as a lieutenant colonel in the Nebraska National Guard and his induction into the Nebraska National Guard Regional Training Institute Hall of Fame further reflect his commitment to serving others. His firm, Berry Law, has secured over $450 million in awards for veterans, and the firm has been recognized with multiple honors, including the Department of Labor's Higher Vets Platinum Medallion. In addition to his success as a lawyer, John is a passionate advocate for veterans in business, sharing his insights through his podcast, Veteran Led, and his book, Veteran Led. With a career spanning legal practice and military leadership, John has built Berry Law into a nationally recognized firm that champions veterans' rights, while also establishing himself as a thought leader in veteran entrepreneurship and leadership. His unique approach to law firm management, focused on mission-driven values, has led to numerous accolades, including being named one of the National Trial Lawyers' top 100 trial lawyers for over a decade. John's commitment to serving those who serve our country goes beyond the courtroom. He's a proud mentor and a fierce advocate for veterans, making a meaningful difference in the lives of his clients and in his community. Today, we touch upon his leadership principles, business practices, and the nuances of representing veterans. John, welcome to Trial Law Review, and thank you for being with me today on the podcast. Appreciate the gift of your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Jason.
Well, first off, thank you for your service. You've had an incredible career from military service to now founding Berry Law and advocating for veterans. How did your experience as a platoon leader in Bosnia and a company commander in Iraq shape the way you approach leadership in your law practice today?
Yeah, I guess just a quick point of clarification, the founder is actually my father, a Vietnam veteran, and he had a famous case, the Green Beret Affair, where he defended the commander of 5th Special Forces in Vietnam, subpoenaed sitting President Richard Nixon, and got the case dismissed. Basically, he caught the CIA in lies during cross-examination, and then that led to the subpoena, and then the case went away. And of course, very interesting lawyers and leaders involved in that case. And in fact, I commissioned an artist to do a painting of the courtroom scene. And the guy was a former Green Beret and a lawyer who became an artist, and that's what he does, historical art. So we're really excited. So that's the founder, and now we have that founding painting, which I think every law firm should have. So we'll start there.
My apologies to your dad. As soon as I asked the question, I realized I didn't phrase it right. So apologies to your dad.
No, that's good. I am the product of nepotism. I am the oldest son. The oldest son is expected to run the family business. That's one of the reasons why I went into the military. I didn't want to go straight to law school. I didn't want to go right into the family business. I have always been highly entrepreneurial. I had a paper out since I was 10. And I was playing college football at the College of William & Mary. I was playing fullback. And I played with Mike Tomlin and Sean McDermott, current Steelers head coach and current Bills head coach. McDermott was in my freshman class. Tomlin was a couple years older. And I was great in high school, but so was everybody. And I was not that good in college, and I got injured. And I thought, you know, I don't want to go straight to law school. I feel like I'm physically in great shape. I want more challenges. And I started, you know, looking at Army Rangers. And I started thinking, man, like, I eat 7 meals a day and try to gain weight every day. I can't even imagine sleeping 2 hours a night, living on 1 to 2 meals a day for 63 days. That just seems like superhuman. There's no way I could do that. And so then there was the challenge. And so I decided that I would become an infantry officer in the Army. So I did the ROTC program my last couple of years of college. And once you become an infantry officer, you get the opportunity to go to airborne school and ranger school. And that's what I did. And shortly after that, I was leading a platoon in Bosnia. And that was a great leadership experience because you're leading men who are older and more experienced than you, and you're the leader. You got to come up with the answers and make the right decisions. And I've seen that in law firms, right, where you may have some senior lawyers who are great lawyers, but they probably shouldn't be making the business decisions. Very similar. We would say that officers plan and NCOs execute. Very similar to lawyers are responsible for the strategy, the plan, and everything that happens in the case. But that doesn't mean they need to do everything. That's why we have paralegals and legal assistants and associate attorneys so that the lawyers can focus on the strategy and the big picture, especially in a big trial, right? There's so many moving parts that you have to orchestrate it. And if you get too deep in the weeds, right, if you're the one that's doing the cross-examination of every single witness or the direct examination of all your experts, you know, you might miss the big picture. And so it really taught me how to look at the big picture. And then I went to law school. I stayed in the Guard because it paid for my law school after I came off active duty. And then I got, I remember I was a new father. My daughter was about 4 months old. And I was a company commander in the Guard. I was a new lawyer. And I was, you know, working about 80 hours a week. And I went to my boss and I said, "Hey, sir, I fulfilled my obligation. I think I'm going to resign my commission. I think I just can't do both." He's like, "You don't have to do both. Your company is deploying to Iraq. And, you know, you'll get orders soon." And it's kind of funny politically. I know in the last campaign, people brought up, well, this certain sergeant major didn't know that his unit was going to get deployed and he got out. I don't buy that because we didn't get orders for months. But my commander said, I'm not letting you out. I'm not letting you out. And he said, you know, there's no stop loss. There's no order. But we are going to... You're gonna take your company to Iraq. And that was one of the best things that happened because I got to, you know, lead 133 soldiers deployed out to Al-Asad, Iraq. And the whole experience was I walked away from the practice of law for a little, almost 18 months. And it was great. And then I came back to it and I stayed in the Guard. And my last job, I was a battalion commander where I had a full-time staff that worked for me, but I only saw them, you know, mostly on weekends. And this was before COVID. So as you can imagine, COVID hits, I already know how to lead a remote team. I mean, and so for us, we actually made significant gains during COVID because we were our national veterans practice. We had people working remote already, but we also had other team members. We were about 30% military at that point, or 30% veteran who knew how to lead remote. So when COVID hit, it was just like, okay, you know, here's our new op plan. We're gonna get backpacks. We're gonna put laptops in them, toilet paper. Remember, everything you need to survive Easter. It was around Easter. We just went remote the next day, and it was not a big deal for most of our team members. But you know, within a week or 2 weeks, people wanted to be back in the office, and so that was interesting. But you know, I think that was one of the key things. If you're gonna scale, look, right now, Barry Law, we've got about 187 employees as of last Friday. We've got team members in, I think, 12 different states. I was in Texas in June, and we have over 20 team members there. And it's one of those things where remote work is the new normal. And you know, the military really showed me when it's important to be boots on the ground and how to really have that great impact when you are boots on the ground, because you don't have a lot of time to be in front of everybody. And it's much like a jury trial. I know now that you see a lot of these great lawyers like Joe Freed talking about, hey, you know, this could be this 2 week jury trial can be done in 2 weeks. Well, it's the same thing in leadership. Yeah, you could go give a 20-minute speech, but if you can get it done in 2 minutes, you'll have a lot more impact.
So a lot to unpack there. I wanted to follow up with you about a question for you as CEO of a law firm, because what you talked about in terms of what the military taught you in terms of having people that focus on what their specialty is. I'm curious about how you evolved your role into what it is today as a CEO, and how the military service influenced your decision to be sitting in that seat versus another seat.
I don't think I really had a choice. My father was a famous trial lawyer, horrible business person. And when I came in, that no one was really running the business. I mean, you got to remember, this is 2003. So everybody thinks of it like a practice. And so as we were growing and trying to develop systems, I realized like I was the only person with that skill set. I was the only person who ever managed people. I was the only person who ever led people. And, you know, I also, in the military, everyone has a specific, what we call an MOS, which means a duty skill identifier. What do you do? And we want to keep people, you know, doing the things that they are well-trained to do. And so for me, what I saw was I saw a lot of our lawyers were doing things that paralegals or legal assistants could be doing, as well as doing their own marketing, doing their own sales, doing their own accounting. And it was just like, why not build this out right? And so we built it like an infantry battalion where there's different staff leaders. Each staff section has a leader. So you got someone who's in charge of sales, marketing, IT, operations, finance, HR, right? So you get all those key positions there, and then their job is to support the lawyers. Now, you have to put a lawyer in charge, because what you don't want is some new associate telling your chief information officer how the IT systems are supposed to run, right? Baby lawyers don't know. So you have to, and as you grow, here's the scary thing, right? When we were like 20 people and we brought our CIO on, we hired way ahead of the need, but he got so used to helping, getting under desks, helping people, that he wasn't building our infrastructure for the future. And that can be a problem too. So I think, you know, leadership, there are people that get degrees, PhDs in leadership, masters in leadership, but it's one of those things you don't learn until you start doing it. And pain is a teaching tool.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you said something that struck me in terms of that, you know, way back when you took over, there really wasn't this kind of move to having law firm CEOs, COOs, CFOs. And I've had quite a few guests on that have talked about that kind of transition that's happening, but there's still a lot of law firms that don't seem to have the infrastructure that normally you would see in a business, which in my mind is problematic, because even though a law firm is a little bit different from a business, there's still business fundamentals that if you don't have your eyes on them, you may not make payroll, or you may not have enough vision to see that your current staff is overwhelmed or underutilized. All of those things that are so important if you're running a business day to day. So it's interesting to hear you talk about how you've built that infrastructure, because I think that there are many law firms today that are still not focusing on, you know, their KPIs and data to make decisions. They don't even see that in their daily review or monthly review or quarterly review of their business, because maybe they're not even doing that, which is, you know, insane.
Well, yeah. And if you're, you know, older like me, you remember the traditional model. One person has to own the vision. And so in the military, we would have the commanders would visualize the battlefield and know where everything was. Here's where the enemy is going to be. You know, here's where the artillery is going to be that's going to rain steel on the enemy. Here is, you know, here's where our infantry is going to be. But you had to visualize and the terrain and all the obstacles that were going to get in your way. You had to be able to see it. And what I think the problem with the old model, which was usually a bunch of partners, usually senior people who have made a lot of money, are very, very comfortable, and they've got a law firm administrator, and this is someone who really is doing 5-6 jobs at once, right? That law firm administrator really may have an office manager, but that administrator is taking care of the marketing, the sales, the finance, the HR, and all sorts of administrative pieces that the lawyers don't want to handle. But the problem is then if the lawyers are in leadership positions and there's one person who's making all those decisions, that person can't see the entire beach ball, right? So it's like you're at a beach and you see the beach ball, but the other half's, you know, facing the ocean. You can't see that. And so if you don't have someone who's really looking for that other side of the beach ball, you as an organization will be blind to it. And when you are, that's when bad things happen. And so I think, you know, I was lucky because I went in the military and not straight to law school. And many of my classmates at William & Mary did go straight to law school. You know, they told me about the partner track and all this stuff, and it seemed very strange and foreign to me. And then I can think of a law firm. I could take you back to 2017. There's a law firm that had 30 lawyers. We had 20 people, okay? Right now, we're five times the size of that law firm. And the reason why, I would talk to the partners. They were my peers, and we would talk, and they'd be like, well, yeah, we're still trying. They'd joke like, you know, we've been trying to decide the color of the carpet in the new office for 6 months now, and we're all arguing over it, you know? And it's like, who cares? Like at the end of the day, at the end of your legal career, do you want to say that, well, I won because we had the tan carpet or the blue carpet? No, I mean, it was so ridiculous. And so they were fighting because lawyers, we love to fight over stupid stuff. It was like being a divorce lawyer, right? Where you know, you're making a lot of money because they're fighting over the blinds, right? The couple's fighting over the blinds that are worth $100 and these lawyers getting paid $800 an hour on each side are fighting over something silly like that. And I always thought, you know, that's not important. Now, if the vision is that we're going to have all blue offices with blue carpet and we're going to throughout the United States, and this is going to be, you know, this is going to be how we're going to look. This is going to be the vision of the outward facing brand of the organization. It's probably worth a discussion. But if it's just how your conference is going to look in one city, you're not thinking big enough.
100%. Well, let's talk a little bit about your leadership philosophy, because just from doing my research in preparation for the podcast, I know it's, and we've already heard it, being deeply influenced by your military background. Can you talk about how you've taken the philosophies that were instilled in terms of your military service and helped to build what is a pretty massive operation, which I didn't have any idea that the size of your firm was as big as it is, but how did you take that to make sure, take those learn to make sure that your team shared your vision for success?
I would credit it to a few things. Number one is, you know, being in the military, every commander had to have a command philosophy and you had to write it out and let the team know it. Number two, a great book by Cameron Harold, Vivid Vision. Read it. It's not a long read, but it tells you how to create the vision. Now, don't, like, we use EOS, Entrepreneur's Operating System. It's good, but it's got some flaws. And one of it is, like, you go to like this 2-page document, the Vision Traction Organizer, and it kind of throws out some numbers and some words. But like at the end of the day, like, paint the picture, right? You want to paint that picture of the future so your team members can know what it's going to feel like to walk in the office. You know, what it's going to look like. You know, what is your marketing going to be like in 3 years? How big is your team going to be? And really paint it out so they can not just hear it, but see with their own eyes that vision. And so you add pictures to it, you know, and so doing that. So having the command philosophy, I think reading Vivid Vision, and you can then create a vivid vision on your own. You just, you know, cut and paste the images you want and go through every single functional area of the firm. And then finally, you know, probably the most important thing was that I decided to write the leadership manual, which is behind me, Veteran Led. I wrote the book. It took me about 3 years. But what I realized was, because I had a command philosophy, I would share it all the time, but people didn't get it and they weren't getting the lessons. And so I, as a leader, was failing. And I realized, like, you know, we've got all these lessons and we keep f-ing up the same stuff again. We kept making the same mistakes over and over again. I would make the mistakes as a leader, and then I would take the blame, and then someone else would make the same mistake, you know, 2 weeks later. It's like, this is a leadership problem. We are not communicating our leadership philosophy. We're not, our principles, we're not doing it well enough. And, you know, some people would say, well, then you just need, you know, live by your core values, right? But that's so cliche. The truth is, I started giving out awards, core value awards. Like, if you catch someone doing something right, you catch someone living a core value, we'd give them an award. But what I realized was we were not using the core values for the most difficult decisions. And that's where core values matter. So now at our quarterly meeting, I'll say, you know what, let me tell you about a hard decision we as the leadership team had to make this quarter. And I want to tell you the core values that went into it, right? And that way they understand a core value, you know, for us, integrity is do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And so if we had somebody who wasn't in integrity, because we can't trust somebody who doesn't do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it, you know, we had to let that person go. And I was pretty blunt about it. hey, this is an integrity issue. Integrity doesn't mean don't lie, cheat, or steal. It meant that in college, but we're a professional organization. We have higher standards, and this is what you have to achieve. And so it's in using those core values to make tough decisions, I think that's where you want to really put your leadership philosophy. Figure out what those values are, and then see if they really work. Because if you're not going to follow them and use them to make tough decisions, and then have the guts to share that with your team, it's not going to stick. It doesn't matter what your leadership philosophy is. It's not going to stick. And so you got to be consistent with it, and every day go to your core values. Because when your values are clear, the decisions sometimes are easier, but not always.
Yeah, that's some really great advice, and it really resonates with me because, one, we use kind of a version of EOS. We used to use it a little more religiously, but we've kind of melded it for our own personal use. But then taking that, those foundations, and painting a picture of the mission and why you do what you do and why it's so important and where you're going organizationally is such an important thing if you really want to get to where you're going. And then the core values, because we early on developed ours: professionalism, respect, integrity, dedication, empathy, and use those in terms of how we make our decisions and how we influence, you know, what we expect in terms of how our team faces off with our clients too. So incredibly important stuff. You mentioned the book, and I had wanted to ask you about that because I know you share strategies on leadership and building successful teams in that book. What are the top three key lessons from the book that has had the biggest impact on your firm's culture and operations?
Execution, execution, execution. That's what matters. You know, a vision is just a fantasy if you can't execute, right? So I think the most important thing is just execution, consistency, and focus. If you can do those things, and focus is tough. Like with EOS, you have a scorecard. Guess what? That matters. None of the other shit matters. I was just doing this the other day. I'm thinking we're missing some numbers on this. We're not hitting the numbers on the scorecard, and I'm pissed, right? I'm calling people out because, unfortunately, we're in an organization where I have to, you know, the dynamic is I got to be the bad guy. I'm okay with it. I like being the good guy. I like being the coach, the friendly guy. But hey, the person who should be the leader of the team is the most intolerant person. I will accept nothing less than excellence. And if there's red on that scorecard, we're going to talk about it. And, you know, I had one where I realized, like, we were trying to get caught up in some policies, and I had the staff drafting the policies, but it had taken their eye off the ball of their metrics on the scorecard. They're doing this other project. Policies are important, right? You don't want to get sued as a law firm, and you want to be, you know, you want to follow your own rules, and you got to update that stuff. But as we were growing so quickly, I was like, we got to get these policies done so we can standardize our workflow and scale and do all this stuff. And so the operators, the ops people standardizing the workflow. And then over here, I'm like, oh, and by the way, do the policies and hit all your numbers on the scorecard. And I realized like that was too much. And what I did, and I'm doing it right now, I said, okay, give me the policies. You know, hey, I'm the guy that graduated from Army Ranger School. I'll take those and throw them in my rucksack and get it done. Let me show you this. And, you know, I got to take that off their plate because I'm demanding that they hit their numbers. I can't be adding additional tasks. And when I do that, we lose focus, you know, and we're not executing. So focus requires, you know, sometimes doing less and not more, and execution requires focus. So from my perspective, if you want to maintain high standards, you know, whether that's in litigation, right? Whether, you know, your lit team, your pre-lit team, whatever, you should have these core standards. This is what right looks like. And we do not deviate from these 10 points of excellence. And if I have you do that, you know, in every single case, if I keep throwing more stuff at you, you're gonna say, well, these aren't as important because John now wants me to draft a policy, right? And so I'm looking at that and I'm going, yeah, the policy is important, but who's the policy protect? It protects the firm. Whose job is it to protect the firm? Me. So I'll take that policy. You guys get the metrics done so that our team members can win more cases, make more money, help more clients, and have happier, you know, it's lawyers that are, I'll just tell you, I've lived the nightmare. I have lived the nightmare where lawyers in the firm are not making much money and they're struggling. They're not happy. Their spouses aren't happy. Their kids aren't happy, right? But when they're doing well financially, their clients are happier, right? Because their clients are like, hey, this guy's doing, and so I've really learned that, you know, you have to create an environment where your team members can focus and you support that focus And you want to reward them for it and so that they can live that great life. But yeah, there's nothing worse than the lawyer who is so strung out. They're not happy with their lives. They're not happy. Their family's not happy with them because they're never around. And they're financially, they've got a bunch of debt. Like, why am I doing this? Why am I going into the car? No, we got to, as leaders, we want them to be more successful than us. How do you come to my organization and I make you an even better lawyer? And so I think that's the question to ask. How do I make you even better? And it all comes down to, once again, it's that discipline, it's that focus, and it's that execution.
So let's talk a little bit about your practice, your specialization. So you guys, your firm has secured hundreds of millions of dollars in awards for veterans. What are some of the unique challenges your firm faces in handling veterans' cases, and how do you overcome them to ensure your clients receive the benefits they deserve?
A lot of the challenges, I think, really help to scale. So one of the challenges is that, you know, the cash conversion cycle on a veteran's disability appeal, it's probably going to be a couple years, right? So, and that case has been around, and the client who a lot of times they contact us, they're like, I just wanted to talk to a person at the VA, right? So they want to talk to a person, they've been waiting a long time to get paid, and they want to get paid now. And so, you know, and it takes a long time to get the appeal through. So we needed to have better client service, better communication. And by the way, we got to be able to fund it. And so we no longer have one, but for years we had a criminal defense practice because we wanted lawyers who could try cases, who could, most criminal cases have trial lawyers try a lot more cases than PI lawyers, right? It's just the nature of the beast. And so we wanted that trial experience, but also the cash conversion on a criminal case where you're getting paid, you know, up front and billing hourly, that can provide cash flow to flow the other part of the firm. So, you know, for years, the profitability of the criminal practice was helping to build the VA practice. And the PI practice was kind of an afterthought. We had a bunch of civil cases and we had some civil lawyers, but we realized, oh my gosh, we've developed a system to gather medical records, to review those records. Pre-lit is very much like the administrative side of veterans' disability law. So we're like, we've already built the machine and we've got trial lawyers, so why don't we just merge them? And that was a lot easier said than done. It took a while, but we got there. But I think the challenges on the veterans' disability side is, you have veterans who are, number one, I think that it's interesting, the VA will, unless you have the VA withhold the money, they will pay it directly to the veteran and you have to collect it from the client, unless you have the VA withhold it. And so what happens though, is that you better have great client service so that they want to pay you, so they don't ghost you. And I embraced that model because I wanted great client service. I wanted a five-star review and referrals from every single client. And so when we know that the client, we're relying on the client to pay us at the end of the case, unlike a PI case where the insurance company is just handing the check over to you and you cut the check, you know, that's tough because you can accumulate a lot of AR. And if you're not communicating with your clients and all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, you owe me some money. They're like, wait, that money was deposited in my bank account 3 months ago. Why didn't you contact me? Well, so, well, we didn't know about it. Well, that's not acceptable, right? So, because the money might be spent. So it really forced us to get better. And the criminal practice initially that provided the cash flow, we outgrew that and it no longer made sense. I think building the practice is tough until you have enough cases in the pipeline and happy clients that refer cases to you that the flywheel starts going. And it's like, boom, we got a case, we won, we get a review, we get a referral, we get, we win another case, and then our marketing dollars, we're gonna get a testimonial. We've got hundreds of testimonial videos. Some of them are just via phone, and then someone sees the testimonial. And so we've built that, so it just keeps churning. And I'm like, look, yeah, if you wanna be the lawyer for one of our veterans, one of our nation's heroes, you should give them five-star service because you wouldn't be practicing law had they not raised their hand and took that solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And so, you know, we as lawyers protect the Constitution for them. And so it's a great honor. But, for me, it's I want to make sure we treat our veterans well. And to do that, about 30% of our team is now veterans. I'm hiring veterans in leadership positions, lawyer positions, and they have a lot better camaraderie with our clients because they speak the same language and they understand, just a lot of the different things that go on. And look, I mean, and the other thing is too, like, let's just say you have erectile dysfunction secondary to your post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you want to tell somebody that? Probably not. But if they're a veteran, you're probably going to be more likely to have an honest conversation. But we also know too, one of the biggest challenges in service, we underreport, right? Hey, I'm fine. And when we represent veterans in PI cases, it's the same thing. I'm fine because it's been drilled into our head. You know, first time I went through Army Ranger School, I got hurt. I tried to hide my injury. It caught up with me. I failed my patrols. I got kicked out. It took me 6 months to heal. So I went back through and graduated Army Ranger School. But I did not want people to know about my injury. And when I went back the second time, I took them. These were paper medical records back in the day. I took that out because they didn't know whether I'd be medically cleared. And then if you wake up in the morning and you're hurting, you go to formation. You don't just call in sick. And then they send you to sick call where you go talk to a medic who says, yeah, here's some ibuprofen and some water. Go back to work, right? So, and of course, if you didn't go to the field or you missed a training exercise, hey, it was highly competitive. Somebody else might get that next leadership slot. Next person might be promoted to team leader and not you because you weren't in the field because you had some silly little knee injury you couldn't handle. And so we jumped out of airplanes. We rucked, you know, threw on heavy 100-pound rucks, you know, went for 10, 15, 20, 30 miles. And, you know, that takes a toll on your body. And now that I'm 50, I feel a little bit more. But back then it was, you know, do you want to be weak? Do you want to be the weak link? You know, and nobody did. And you look at the man to your left and to your right. You know, are they going to trust you in combat? If every time you're hurt, you're going to sick call medical, you need to document your injuries? No. And so it was very tough sometimes to go back and substantiate that those injuries happened in service. But that's what we do. And it's not much different than a PI case where you say, okay, we got to prove causation here.
It's interesting listening. You talk about the fact that the veterans benefits getting paid directly to the veteran, because we have something similar because we do a lot of Medicare compromise and waiver requests where when Medicare grants it, the money goes back to the Medicare beneficiary, and the importance of someone being happy because you're dependent on them being honest with you about, you know, receiving those benefits that you had an agreement to when you secure them, you know, in terms of payment. So it's just interesting hearing you talk about that. Well, I wanted to ask you about your podcast. You've got your own podcast, Veteran Led, and you talk about leadership lessons from veterans. And I'm curious, what are the top five most impactful insights from veterans you've interviewed that you believe every law firm owner or law firm administrator or CFO or CEO should hear?
I will get that, but I want to go back to your last statement because I think this is really important point for people working in our field, because we can have the VA withhold, but it withholds money at a lower percentage, and then there's an entire administrative process. And so what it does is it slows down your ability to get paid. And so there are firms that the VA owes them millions of dollars in attorney's fees, and they're waiting, you know, 3, 4, 6 months to get paid, and it screws up their cash flow. So we do have the option to have the VA withhold, but you know, at the end of the day, I like the model where we're relying on our clients want to pay us, and we have that type of relationship where if they want to pay us, they're going to want to refer us cases. They're going to want to have a relationship with us. And that's kind of where, you know, Veteran Led came from. It was what's next for the veterans. And so my podcast, Veteran Led, we have veterans who want bigger, better futures beyond military service. So we've had a lot of those individuals say, hey, you served your country. You have those built-in leadership skills. You've already established yourself as a leader. Let's go use that so that you can help your community, whether it's a private, you know, a company, or whether it's a nonprofit, doesn't matter. But like, let's get you back out there. You're America's greatest resource. You are a proven leader. Get out in the community and lead. Now, that being said, so what are the principles? It all depends. I think one of my favorite chapters, and probably one of the shortest, is Ride the Lightning. Now, when you're firing a belt-fed machine gun, what will happen is sometimes you'll get a runaway gun, which means you can take your finger off the trigger, but the rounds are still feeding through the belt. You're not even pulling the trigger, okay? So imagine that. You're not squeezing the trigger. You're not touching the trigger. Rounds are going downrange. I think any business, but especially a law firm, is like that, where it's like everything is slow, and you're working, you're grinding. And then one day, it clicks, and you've got a runaway gun. And now, all of a sudden, you are growing like crazy. You've got all these employees. Revenue's growing. You get all these opportunities, and it's like, all you're doing is holding onto that gun and letting the rounds go downrange to the target. Now, when you're behind that machine gun, you have two options. You can stay on target until the belt runs out, or you can try to stop and break the link, right? But if you break the link, you've now have removed your concentration from the target. Now, usually you'll have an assistant gunner when you have a machine gun and they can break the link for you. But the point is this, you don't ever want to lose that momentum as a leader. John Maxwell's law of momentum. You know, it's very, once you get the momentum going, it wants to keep going. It's like, you know, it's physics, right? Objects stay in, get in motion. They want to stay in motion. And when you hit that velocity and it keeps increasing, it gets scary as a leader, because all of a sudden you were worried last week that your payroll, or last month that your payroll was $100,000, right? And you can remember, you know, a year ago when it was $10,000 for payroll or whatever, right? And so, and now you may be, you know, you're still emotionally scarred from the $100,000 mistake you made last year, and you just made a $1 million mistake. Hey, be grateful you're making $1 million mistakes, that you are in a position to make a mistake that big. So I think ride the lightning. If you're the leader of the law firm, have the vision, stick to it. And when things start to, when things go bad, it's easy to dig in and say, I'm gonna suck it up. But when things start going really good, don't be scared and sabotage yourself. Ride the lightning. It's going to be okay. You're going to grow, and you know, enjoy the discomfort and enjoy it. But when that happens, it won't last forever. Those rounds will run out, and you'll be back to the grind soon. But you will hit a growth plateau. So you'll runaway gun and then growth plateau. Runaway gun. It doesn't happen like a straight line. It's all very jagged. And enjoy the upswing. So that's number one. Ride the lightning. When it comes, ride it. Don't break the link. Don't back down. Don't back out. Your team is relying on you for a bigger, better future, and you had better provide it, or they will leave and work for your competitor. So ride the lightning. Number two is sense of urgency. Tomorrow is not promised. It's just like in litigation. There are people that, you know, that sit back, man. No, take control, take the tempo, take the fight to the enemy, take the initiative. You're more likely to win if you can get them on their heels, because you can move quicker. It's all about agility. So move with a sense of urgency. The other one that I really, you know, I think is more, you know, holistically understanding the three parts of the book. Survive is the first part, thrive, then dominate. You survive as an individual, develop the individual skills to be a leader. You will thrive when you have a team of leaders that you can work with. But where you will dominate is when you develop to the organizational level. And so just understand that you need to develop skills. If you can't lead yourself, you can't lead anybody else. Okay? If you have no accountability, you're toast. Just forget it. but if you can lead yourself, you can lead someone else. And if you can lead a team, you can lead a team of teams and develop an organization. So the whole goal is domination, which is developing a resilient and relentless organization. So that's those three big ones. You know, the other things, as wet as you're gonna get, I talk about my dad in Vietnam. Look, man, bad things are gonna happen. And the more you grow, oh man, like the worse it's gonna get. I remember 10 years ago, I was at an Avo conference, and the CEO of Avo, you know, the Expedia guy or whatever he was sitting at the breakfast table alone. So I walked up to him and I sat down and I said, hey, how's it going? He's like, it's good, I'm down to 6 lawsuits now. Only 6 people are suing us. And you know, that's a great problem to have when you're that big. And so I think, you know, there's gonna be times when you're gonna be as wet as it's gonna get, which means all the bad stuff is gonna happen. You're gonna have the bar complaint. You're gonna have the malpractice claim. Your best lawyer is gonna get poached. Who knows what? I mean, I could tell you some stuff that in your personal life that's going to happen, you know, that's going to throw you for a loop. And you can't just crawl in the corner and start crying. So the story is this. My dad is, he was a lawyer in Vietnam. He's traveling in a Jeep on permissive travel orders. He's got a gunner and a driver, and they hit a monsoon. And they're on this washed out road, and they can't get down the road. The road is just all mud now. It's raining. And my dad's got all of his court papers in a briefcase, and they're getting soaked. And he was an infantry officer before. So he became a jaguar because he didn't want to be an infantry officer. He didn't want to have to slog through the mud. And so he's sitting there and he's complaining. And the sergeant, they decide they're going to walk back to headquarters about 2 miles through the bush. And he says, sir, quit your bitching. You're as wet as you're going to get. And I think when you're with your team, don't be like my dad was. Don't be complaining about it. It's like, man, the rain is coming down. We're as wet as we're going to get. The rain might keep coming, but you know, we gotta show up for the team. And we can't just, you can never quit. And the team relies on you. And I think so often you're in a leadership position because you have the mane of a lion. You can take the beating. You may not be the smartest person or the fastest person or the best lawyer, but by God, people follow you because they know you're not going to cower when the shit hits the fan. They want you in their proverbial foxhole. They're going to follow you because they know that when it's as wet as it's going to get, you could take more. And people want to be led. People want safety. You know, they want that lion out there because, look, it's a scary place. And, you know, especially the practice of law, it's competitive, you know, and bad things happen every single day. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. And the bigger you get, the better you get, the more challenges are going to come your way. And, hey, be ready for it. So that's four. And I think the fifth thing, and probably, you know, for me, as I go through all of them in my head, they all seem so important, but developing the team, you know, that you have to invest in your team. You know, you have to have that second in command. And so for me, like, I have an executive assistant who runs my day-to-day. I also have a chief operating officer who runs the business. Now, the great thing about having an executive assistant is this podcast and all that stuff, that's all separate from our whole marketing operation. I mean, the marketing team still is involved, but I have somebody else who's worried about what John is doing day to day. And the reason why that's so important is because if you're the leader of the law firm, look, I learned this in Ranger School, going with no food, and no sleep. If you don't take care of yourself, you make shitty decisions and your team deserves better. So you need, the best investment you can make is, well, you may make your paralegal or your legal assistant, you know, do it on the side, whatever, but hey, you shouldn't be planning your own travel. You shouldn't be scheduling your own haircuts, doctor's visits, whatever. You need to worry about the success of the firm. And what you get paid for, and I learned this the hard way, is not, you know, having more billable hours than everybody else or making more money than every other lawyer in the firm. Leadership by example, right? When you're developing your team, leadership by example is you're getting paid to make the big decisions. So you may not be billing the most hours. That's where I thought that's what was it. But what I learned is it's really about developing the organization so that you have lawyers who are better than you doing the work so you can sleep at night and not worry that they screwed up the case. And you have a second in command who could run the staff so that while you are out looking for new opportunities and looking for ways to exponentially grow the firm, you know that the firm is incrementally growing because the leaders are doing their job. And you know, finally, with a you know an executive assistant, I would just say that when life hits you with those personal things, you know, you still got to show up, right? It's like a court, a jury trial Monday. You still got to show up. Having that person there to take care of that stuff, worth its weight in gold. Because what you're investing in when you have an assistant, you're investing in yourself. When you have a chief operating officer, who are you investing in? You're investing in yourself. And when you have a team of great lawyers who are better than you, who are you investing in? You know, your firm. So invest in yourself, invest in your firm, because they are all invested in you. They're following you. They're giving you time they will never get back. They're giving you the most precious thing they can, their future. And you as the leader are responsible for that future. So, you know, and it doesn't really matter, Jason. I don't know. How many employees do you have?
We've got about 100.
Yeah. So what happens if you hang it up tomorrow?
There's systems in place. There's people that will lead the organization. It's not dependent on me or any one person now. It used to be when we first started, it was, but today, everything's in place to, you know, someone replaces, it's next man up.
Yep. And that's the same way in the military. Someone gets shot. We have a chain of command in place. We know who's stepping up. So as you build that with a second in command, with the EA, there are people who will, the mail comes in for you, Jason, and you're not there. Doesn't matter. Someone's going to process it. Someone's looking. Someone's going to check your email. And that's the whole point, I think, as a leader, is readiness is about you taking care of your team. And so investing in the development of your people, that's an investment in being ready for the next thing. And that's safety for your team. And it's really important. So those are the five things.
So you've built a really impressive reputation in the communities you serve. I'm curious what you think is the most important thing for personal injury lawyers or paralegals that are listening to the podcast to understand when they're representing clients who are veterans who have served, how can they best serve them?
Well, I would say this. Don't worry about your reputation. Worry about your results. If you always do the right thing and follow your values, your reputation will take care of itself. But if you want to, I think, lead others, it starts with getting those personal results. And if you can get results for one client, they're going to tell another client and another and another. And if you can train one lawyer and make them even better on your team, they're going to help you recruit another and another. So it really comes down to, I think, being able to grow by getting those results, by doing the right thing. And reputation, yeah, just do the right thing. You know in your gut what's the right thing. And guess what? You know what? You'll make some bad decisions. You'll make some selfish decisions. You will make some decisions that will hurt your firm. But on balance, if you always try to do the right thing and you are results oriented, you will succeed.
Well, last question, and you've been generous with your time, and this is open-ended. You can answer it however you want, and because the podcast is called Trial Lawyer View, what's your view as a trial lawyer and a veteran?
You know, my view is sometimes, you know, you get in a courtroom and you might be intimidated by the judge because the judge is in charge. Or in the military, there's a chain of command, and it may be that there's a guy with stars on his shoulder, the general officer, and you may, you know, I think it's very easy in these environments to be afraid to do what you need to do. And, you know, I think people think, oh yeah, trial lawyers are fearless, whatever, but it has to be tempered with, you know, showing respect and doing other things. I've seen people blatantly disrespectful, and they're horrible lawyers. The juries hate them, the judges hate them, and their reputations are tarnished because they think they can go in there and bully their way around. But I've also seen great lawyers who show too much deference to, I think, you know, they kind of let the other side run over them. You know, they don't really stand up to the court. You know, you have to be respectful, but there are times when you will need to stand up. And I think that you have to be discerning enough to know when is the right time. But I think that's, you know, the toughest thing about being a trial lawyer is that your client came to you and said, help me with my future. This is my future and I'm handing it to you. And that is a beautiful honor. That is a great privilege, but that is a heavy, heavy burden. And so as you're dealing with that and your client's emotions and difficulties through all of it, you're also dealing with, you know, the other personalities, opposing counsel, you know, the judge, whomever, you know, or whomever's going to make the decision. And you have to be able to balance all of that and be courageous without alienating people. And I think that's one of the toughest things to do, because it's easy to go in there with a stick and bully people. And it's also easy just to let, you know, everybody else have their way. You've got to find that happy medium where you walk into the courtroom and you own it, but people still like you even though you own it. And I think it's really tough. But if you put your client first and you say, you know what, I have a heavy burden. My burden is to get justice for my client. And I know that my best may not be good enough, but I'm going to come in here and like an athlete, I'm going to play by the rules. I am going to fight. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to leave it all out on the field. I'm going to be more prepared than the other side, but I'm also going to be aware of my surroundings. And I think that's the key, is be prepared enough that you can actually pay attention to what's going on in the courtroom. I've had so many cross-examinations that I may have had three more pages of outlines, but I got the perfect answer and I didn't need it. I had the self-awareness. And in my book, we talk about situational awareness, but the situational awareness to understand that this witness just bled out on the stand. And all I could do with asking more questions would be to rehabilitate that witness or make the jury feel sorry for him. So sometimes, you know, you have to be so prepared and understand what you want and what the big picture is, that when you get into the minutia, not everything is worth fighting for. And that you become the most professional, most credible person in the courtroom. And you do that by being prepared and being aware. And that situational awareness is everything. Know what's going on. And for me, it took a long time to develop it. I don't think it's probably 2018 when I went to trial lawyers college where that really clicked, right? And by that time, I've been a lawyer for 15 years. And I didn't figure that out, but it's like, I am missing a lot going on in the courtroom because I'm glued to my notes or I'm glued to my strategy and I'm not as fluid as I need to be. I need to loosen up a little bit. But the way you loosen up is not by winging it, but by being prepared when you go in.
Great advice and great way to close us out. So, John, if someone's listening to this podcast today and they've got a veteran's case that they want to refer to your firm or even a personal injury matter in a jurisdiction that you guys have offices in, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, berrylaw.com, berrylaw.com. We have a phone number, 888-883-2483. Learned that in the military. Always repeat the important stuff twice. But yeah, or, you know, listen to the podcast, Veteran-Led Podcast. We're on YouTube, all the social media channels, and of course, all the Spotify, Apple, all the podcasts, whatever. But there's a lot of military leadership lessons, but most of them apply to the law firm. And the Veteran-Led book is basically how I grew the firm and our leadership manual for the firm. So if you want to learn more, and I'm on LinkedIn, I'll probably respond to you on LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is a great platform. I like it that we celebrate each other's wins and we get to know people professionally. And it's I wouldn't say it's devoid of politics, but it's certainly people are there to support each other and to develop connections. And I love having followers on LinkedIn that I can, you know, I can connect with you. You can connect with me. I want to see what, you know, what's going on in the world. But I really think that LinkedIn is a great platform. That's the only social media that I'm on. I have a presence everywhere. I have no idea what's on it. I don't run it. But I am actually on LinkedIn.
Well, great. We'll link to all of that in our show notes for today's episode. John, thank you again for giving us your time today. And we'll see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer View.
Thanks so much for having me, Jason.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.